believe we have about 30 people signed up on the first item.
And how many on the second, Carl?
Three.
Okay, so perhaps we could take...
Maybe let's reverse that with everyone's indulgence. You want to take the three first?
Well, you could take three and three.
Okay.
And then
we'll do three and three until... Yeah, that's right. Good suggestion. Okay, we'll take the first three on item 105.
On 805. First three, please come on up, are Jim Hewer, Fred Leeson, and Kathy Galbraith. And they'll be followed by Jeff Fish, John Woon, and Peter Belons, I believe is the last name.
I think we've heard from Jeff Fish, so I don't think he's left. So.
And then we'll take the three from the Design Commission sign up.
Yeah,
after that.
That's the three I did.
Okay, right. Sorry. Thanks.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks, Kathy. Thank you. Okay, we'll make sure they get them.
Are we doing 3 minutes?
Yes, yeah. Please. Good afternoon. Kathy, would you like to start?
Mayor Hills, I'm on the list first, so okay, if I may. We have about eight speakers with the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. This is the group that engaged with you last year on the Historic Resource Code Improvement Project. My name is Jim Hoyer. I'm a member of the PCHR and also a member of the Irvington Community Association's Land Use Committee. I have just a couple of comments with respect to ICA because my colleague was not able to appear today, and that has to do on the design guidelines issue. One of the questions was what happens if there isn't a design guideline, and the answer for a downtown district is a different answer from what applies to entities like Irvington, which is 2,800 properties, and it's covered by the Section G that is basically 10 very vague statements about aspirational desires for historic preservation, and they completely baffle our citizens. And we basically have set up a process within Irvington to try to guide people through that, but it's onerous. And we really do need, and this is true of all the other districts that are not in downtown that are without guidelines, we need something better than what we have. With that said, we'd like to focus instead for the moment on the priority number five, preservation of our communities and neighborhoods, in the face of the alarming and ever-increasing rate of single-family residence demolitions. We strongly support the recommendations of the commission on the 3 points that they have raised. But before we comment on those things specifically, we want to just remind the folks about the 300 demolitions per year rate. And we have actually gone through hundreds and hundreds of individual permits looking for examples of the virtual demolitions. We did not find it nearly as difficult as the DRAC representative seems to indicate it might be. And with that, we believe that about 33% ratio, so about a third additional virtual demolitions for every demolition that is actually properly permitted. We believe that there's a means for identifying those. The real rate's about 400 per year. Now, there are two reasons for the house demolitions: replacement of modest homes with more expensive ones, and replacement of homes on lots zoned for more residential units. About 45% are one for one, which is not truly one for one. It's one small for one very much larger. And that difference is in some cases dramatic. We have houses at $360,000 being purchased and replaced with new houses that will sell for $895,000. So these are not small numbers. About 45% of the demolitions, roughly half, are zoning opportunity situations. Now, a question came up earlier: how many single-family houses do we have, and what are the exposures that we have? Well, there are approximately 145,000 single-family houses in the city. Of those, 28,000, or roughly 20%, are zoned for higher density. With that, we really are hugely at risk. And of those, half are over 75 years old, and they have a median value of $272,000. So these are working-class houses that have a big red tag on them that says, "Tear me down." With that, I'll pass the baton to Fred, who will pick up on more impacts to the neighborhoods.
Hi, nice to see you again. I'm Fred Leeson, Board President of Bosco Milligan Foundation, the Architectural Heritage Center, resident in Northeast Portland for 41 years. I applaud the Landmarks Commission for its thoughtful and perceptive report, and would love to see progress on all of their recommendations. But I do want to talk about the demolition syndrome, which is chewing its way through our most livable and affordable neighborhoods. When we talk about livable neighborhoods, and planners like to talk about the walkable city, sense of place, and affordable housing, we're describing Portland's wonderful streetcar neighborhoods that were built in the 19-teens and the 1920s. Developers now plundering these locations for the three famous real estate reasons: location, 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 and who's to blame them. But why should we care about these grand old neighborhoods? Well, there are a bunch of reasons. From your perspective, loss of affordable housing. Those of you that have worked and tried to put together affordable and low or moderate income housing know how difficult that is to achieve. So how can we sit idly by while hundreds of units a year that we already have are being torn down one house at a time? What we're losing are houses built with old growth wood and some of the finest building materials known to man. We're shipping them to the landfill. For the environment and the carbon footprint, we should be rehabbing and retrofitting instead of demolishing. The greenest building is the one that's already there. You've heard that. If density is your concern, accessory dwelling units are a far better solution than McMansions. And let's not overlook sense of place. When you say you grew up in St. John's or Selwood or Laurelhurst or Rose City Park, you know what it means, even if you don't have the architectural vocabulary to talk about it. You know something about the building size and setbacks and yards and the neighborhood feel, the things that make each neighborhood great in its own way, all adding up to the livable city that we love and enjoy. One of the scrape and build developers had an advertisement a few days ago, claimed he was saving the environment one house at a time. Folks, there's no bigger lie than to buy into that. In fact, he's doing irreparable harm one house at a time. There are solutions for you to consider. Others are going to speak to them. I know your hearts are in the right place. I think that we can put our heads together and come up with solutions, and you're going to hear about those. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Galbraith. Before I start, I want to say how much I enjoyed Gwen Milius's presentation from the Design Commission. I've had a few experiences there where I've gone to support a neighborhood that's very concerned about a major project, and you could always count on Gwen to be the person who would really reach out to find the empathy to understand the concerns being expressed by people in the community, which I can't say I saw in all of the commissioners, but she is really going to be greatly missed, and we have to clone you. I'm the director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. We own and operate the Architectural Heritage Center, where the Portland Region's Historic Preservation, Education, and Advocacy Organization. We're a founding member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, and we participate and continue to participate in a number of both the successes and the challenges that were included in the Landmarks Commission's report. For example, we've participated strongly for many years in efforts in Skidmore Old Town and New Chinatown, Japantown, especially at the West Quadrant Plan effort the last 18 months. We still have some serious concerns that I think you're going to hear about a little bit later. We're engaged in the efforts to save the Portland Gas and Coke Company building by meeting with the Friends Group, and we've also offered to serve as the fiscal pass-through for their fundraising efforts. We're working on a package of seismic incentives that we'll be bringing to you in early 2015. We're also working behind the scenes on the Morris Marks House. The Landmarks Commission has been exceptionally active and proactive in the past year, and I think their report reflects that. I'm thrilled that they included the concerns of the epidemic of demolitions that's happening throughout Portland neighborhoods. We're the frontline first responder, and every day I get numerous emails and telephone calls about one more demolition from alarmed people in Portland neighborhoods throughout the city. In June, I was asked by the neighborhood coalitions to join in a forum that was sponsored on the demolitions epidemic at Concordia, and I could feel the hunger in the room just for someone on the panel to acknowledge the depth of their fear, their anxiety, their concerns, and their alarm, and the fact that nobody seemed to want to deal with their issues. What they tended to say uniformly is that they see houses falling in their neighborhoods with no notice to be replaced by what many people said destroys the character of our neighborhood, and the city gives all the rights to the builders and none to those of us who live here. And this is what people said at the meeting. This is an equity issue as we lose scores of houses that have long provided affordable housing and starter homes. There's already so much concern about gentrification. You've been talking about that yourselves. The epidemic continues to push people of limited means and people of color out of the city. I can tell you bluntly that we've lost at least 14 buildings associated with Portland's African-American history that we documented. And I don't believe that anyone in the neighborhood along Williams Avenue believes that the design overlay zone is working. If you look at the apartment buildings that are there, this is a sustainability and equity or an energy issue. I have one quote that I want to read to you. The Green Lab, the Preservation Green Lab of the National Trust, did a study. They looked at 4 cities and 6 types of buildings and their environmental impacts. They presumed that 1% of Multnomah County's building stock would be demolished over the next 10 years, and that if that 1% of buildings were retrofitted and reused instead, it would amount to 15% of the county's carbon reduction targets over the same 10 years. That's a major impact. I want to close by saying that this is the Portland moment. I think that in the future, people will look back to this time period as the time that we decided the future of our city and the future of our beloved neighborhoods. We're enjoying growing desirability as a place to live, and it seems that we could be more selective in what we choose to preserve and what we choose to allow to build on our most precious commodity, which is our land. Our most stunning assets are our physical setting and our physical character, which is made up of the buildings in and around the neighborhoods that are being erased day by day. And I know that you care. You sit up here, multiple times every week. You put in hundreds of hours every month that in the leadership that you provide. And if I have heard one thing from people, it's that they want something to be done sooner rather than later. They don't want to wait for the comprehensive plan to be finished. They've already seen some of what's in the plan that's planned for their neighborhoods, and they're not necessarily excited about what they're seeing. So some activity sooner rather than later, I think, is probably the thing that I've heard the most. On the second page of my testimony are the fixes that we went to the forum proposing that we've gotten consensus around, and then I received suggestions from another 54 people, and the ones that I listed at the bottom of page 2 were the things that there was a lot of support for that we're going to take out for consensus from all of the people that have continued to participate in our effort. And in the following testimony, you're going to hear the points that the coalition has agreed are the priority steps to take.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I ask a question, Ms. Gilroy? In terms of your list of possible actions, I mean, you talk about requiring notice for all demolitions, changing the definition of demolition, mandatory delay, but we could do all those things and still have a demolition happen. It was just a matter of notice and delay. So what I've been wondering is, I mean, what are the possible rules for preventing demolitions? I mean, do we say that, do we turn the entire city into a series of design and historic districts and say that any new house has to be part of the character? Do we say that no building over X age gets demolished, period? Do we say that, you know, people who live in the immediate vicinity of the building get to vote on whether it gets replaced? I mean, I'm just kind of struggling for what the rules could be that would actually prevent demolitions as opposed to merely delay them.
You know, Commissioner Novick, you've raised some really good ideas that, in my mind, would be a preservation utopia, and I know they're not very realistic. But I think the fact that people get up one morning and the next day the house next door to them is being torn down and nobody's had the courtesy to let them know. And we know, based on what Mr. Fish said, that, you know, there are good builders and there are builders that aren't so good, and everybody is not getting the environmental inspection. Not only are the neighbors not being protected, the workers aren't being protected. There's no dust control measures. There's no fencing. These things are an attractive nuisance to kids. The opportunity for notice gives people the opportunity to start having some conversations. You know, every builder is not somebody that can't be inclined to make some different decisions. Buying a house is not necessarily the solution. It's probably the single least feasible solution for people to gather together and buy a property. But plans are refined all the time. It happens before every board and commission in the city, and that can often happen among good neighbors. And a builder, you know, we're not looking at the evil builders and developers. We're looking at a system that allows and aids and abets what is going on. And you can't fault people for following a process that they're allowed to use. The weakness is really the rules and regulations that we don't have.
Remember that 20% of our houses that are zoned for higher density, they are all really at risk. Mm-hmm. And that is something that can be adjusted through processes if the city controls.
Just very briefly, too, Commissioner, your question addresses the point that we don't have a procedure to decide what should be saved and what shouldn't be saved. And we agree there are houses that should disappear. But we have no way of saying before they're gone, whoops, this one was historic because, this was important because, not important.
Hey, just one other note is that when you talk about, I mean, the carbon impact of, you know, demolition and reconstruction, I mean, that's something we should pay a lot of attention to. And it occurs to me that if we get to the point where we do adopt a carbon tax and put a price on carbon, which I would, of course, suggest be offset by sort of an income tax rebate to low and middle income people, you should have the carbon tax apply to demolition and construction activities as well, sort of take into account what the carbon impact is.
The city has or is supposed to have an expanded carbon reduction plan, and I've learned a lot about it at the West Quadrant Plan meetings. Mm-hmm. There are a few members of the Stakeholders Advisory Committee that are really quite upset that the West Quadrant Plan is not adequately addressing this issue, and he believes that every aspect of the city's comprehensive plan, every quadrant, every neighborhood has to consider this. The city needs to do a better job.
That's really useful. I mean, I don't think we've connected the dots between those, between the carbon reduction plan and these issues. I think you really highlighted that. Another question I have, I mean, we need to talk a lot, and you've given us some specific ideas already about what needs to change in code. Are there other non-code tools that we ought to try to be encouraging or creating, land trusts, we've had some heroic rescues by, you know, sort of private superheroes. That's how these things have played out, more like a movie script than a deliberative public process. And we're happy about those superheroes, but is there a way to institutionalize some of that, not as a substitute for governmental supervision, but as a supplement?
You know, I have heard from, you know, since the demolition forum on June 11th, I have heard from 54 people representing at least 26 neighborhoods suggesting all kinds of things. And what I included on the list here of potential fixes were the things that there was a lot of consensus over that didn't look like they were a great stretch for the city to take rather quickly, rather than, well, geez, it'll take 2 and 3 years of hearings on those. But, you know, one guy commented in an email to me. He said, you know, it takes more notice and city process to build a chicken coop in my backyard than it does to demolish a fantastic historic house that has no protection. And that just really struck me as an observation made by a person, a smart person, in a neighborhood who's looking at, you know, the checks and the balances that we seem to not have. You know, you're forced to deal with issues as they arise. You know, parking became a hot issue when all of the apartment buildings were proposed with no parking. And, you know, I think with the comprehensive plan update, there's the opportunity to listen to, if we're really willing to listen to and modify the vision that somebody upstairs has, you know, some ways to make the city more equitable and more reasonable and more balanced and more balanced and more respectful. But there are ideas that people have that they've raised, and I think there's a lot of ideas in this room of things that we could do sooner rather than later. Nobody has a corner on creativity and brilliance, that's for sure.
Ms. Scott, I really appreciate your testimony, but I have to ask you, how much time have you spent with chickens?
Mr. Hoyer?
We'll get back to you on that one.
Because I grew up going out and picking up eggs and being attacked by a rooster every morning, so I consider chickens dangerous animals. So I think there should be strong regulations governing their presence.
I listened to a rooster across the road, and I've grown to enjoy it.
Thank
I'm
you
not
going
to build a chicken coop. I don't want to go through the process.
Thank you very much. Okay, so let's go to the three that are signed up on the Design Commission report, please, and then we'll switch.
Okay, was Jeff Fish going to speak again? He's good. Okay, then we'll go with John Woon, Peter Ballant, and we'll take Brandon Spencer Hartle off the other list. Those three, John Woon, Peter Ballant, and Brandon Spencer Hartle.
Any
of
those?
We're present, but we respectfully yield.
And your name was?
Peter Ballant.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll also go with Teresa Rayford and Tanya March now, if you're down here. and they will be followed by Peggy Moretti, Tim Askin, and Valerie Atchison. Tim left. Okay, Wendy Rom will be in the next group as well.
Great. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, Council, my name is Brandon Spencer Hartle, address 24 Northwest First Avenue, and I'm here representing Restore Oregon. Restore Oregon is the statewide historic preservation nonprofit for Oregon. And one thing I should say before starting my testimony is that Brian, Carolyn, Jessica, and the rest of the Landmarks Commission did a great job, including the nonprofit community and the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, into their report and their remarks to you today. They've asked for our feedback. They've asked for our perspectives from the nonprofit world to bring into what they presented to you. So thank you to Brian and the rest of the commission. I'm speaking to you today in support of the Historic Landmarks Commission's white paper recommendations addressing the current epidemic of residential demolitions. 2 weeks ago, the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources met and had a long conversation about what we felt were pragmatic, action-oriented steps that this commission could take to move the demolition issue forward towards smarter, broader resolutions to get at some of the neighbors' concerns. We felt there were three areas that needed to be addressed, and that's what you saw reflected in the white paper. I'm going to go through those three different recommendations to give you a sense as to where we're coming from and why we think these are important things to act on. The first two come out of the building code, Title 2455-150 and Title 2455-200. First is the definition of demolition. There exists no definition of demolition in the building code, but there is a placeholder for a definition. We've looked at what other cities have proposed and what other cities have incorporated. We feel that 50% removal of a structure or 50% removal of perimeter walls would be an appropriate way to pragmatically classify the loss of a building. On the second recommendation, in the building code, developers can skirt existing delay and notification requirements by proposing a one-for-one replacement of an existing residential structure. In many cases, what we're seeing is a developer demolishing the existing structure, proposing an individual replacement structure, and then a matter of days or weeks later, proposing additional units on the site. This issue and this loophole can be remedied by passing an ordinance removing Section K1 in Code Chapter 2455-200, and that would put all demolitions of residential buildings in residential zones on the same playing field. What you have now is you have a system that's geared towards people who are looking for that loophole, and it's not something that's going to support density or other city objectives. The third recommendation, this gets at some of the questions that Commissioner Novick and Mayor Hales just asked, is we would ask that the council direct staff at BDS and BPS to work with the preservation community and DRAC to identify longer-term solutions for the demolition issue. We know staff is working with this issue every day. They've got great ideas. They've got a great insight as to what's going on out there. In addition to those two code changes, we feel like a task force could start to identify both building and zoning code improvements that would get at demolitions, but also what takes their place. So anyway, we understand that this is not necessarily a density issue. This is a bigger issue than boiling it down to something that's black or white, but we would ask you to consider those three requests of council from the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources to get at solutions not 6 months down the road, but sooner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Teresa, you want to go next?
Yes, sir. Hi, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Teresa Rayford. I'm here representing the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. My family owns this property, which is located at 3962 Northeast Martin Luther King and Shaver. Historically, in our community, it's been known as the Burger Barn location, but we've realized that it is a 114-year-old structure, and there's a lot of history behind it, going back to the 1900s when a black woman named Catherine Gray and her family lived there. So a lot of people, when we mentioned that information, didn't even know that black people lived in that part of the community, and they didn't know that we owned a property that was the second oldest north of Fremont. And so with that being said, there is a lot of value as far as the cultural equity that people in that community are looking for. I think that this is a project for enticement. I've been working with Kathy since about 2011 when I went to an event over at the Architectural Heritage Center, and she knew my name and she knew my family's history, and I didn't know some of the history she discussed with me. And even when I brought that history back to our community, a lot of people didn't understand the value of it or even what to do with it. So in the years past the time that I met her, I've learned a lot about what we're doing here, about these commissions and how they stand up for communities. that believe in the preservation and the storytelling, and she made reference to disappearing history. Well, we want to stop that, and I'm hoping that with this report that they came out with, which I really appreciate it, and I do support the recommendations that Brandon has just given, I'm hoping that one of the things that we can do with the HRI and with the 120-day delay is that we can create a coalition between these agencies that can help people like myself in our communities where we don't have the million-dollar donors find resources and relationships that can help us preserve these properties, and not just so that they can sit as structures, but because they can provide economic opportunities to people that live in those communities. One of the biggest things that we have going on in the state of Oregon and really in the city of Portland is homelessness. But if we have all of these structures that are out here and we're looking at legislation in the future that's going to offset the cost or the tax burden that the people that want to invest in revitalizing these properties are going to receive, then we can also look at that as an asset to provide affordable housing and structures that don't need to be demolished but probably just need to be restored. So I'm hoping that with the involvement and engagement of all stakeholders that we can get to that level at some time and get rid of that word gentrification, because I think that it can be offset by information, education, and inclusion, and that's what I'm hoping for, and that's why I'm here today. And thank you for the audience. I brought a picture of the building. This is from 1929. I brought in a couple of letters of support from the Architectural Heritage Center and Oregon Black Pioneers, the King Neighborhood Association, and Mike Ryerson's Tours, which are some of the reflective organizations that I think would benefit from it, and also some history. So I'll give that to you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having us today, Mayor Hales and Council. My name is Tanya Lynn March. I live at 8334 North Hartman Street. As the Vice President of the Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center, I want to thank the Landmarks Commission for acknowledging in the report the efforts of the Northwest Children's Theater, our board, and our community members for moving the building to the accomplishment section of the report. I'm now putting on another hat. I am the Northwest District Association representative on the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. We support the three-point approach presented by Brandon Spencer-Hartle to manage the demolition trend. Karen, also of the NWDA, will bring a letter today from the NWDA with our take on it that went through board approval. My concern is about the historic resource inventory, which is priority two of the report. I keep hearing people discussing the money and focusing on the $20,000 and, well, isn't it wonderful that we have Google Earth now and we can use handheld data devices and we can go out and we can do an inventory a different way. I think this expresses a certain amount of wishful thinking because we're not applying the lens of equity to the historic resource inventory. When that resource inventory was done in the 1980s, it was when great white man's history was still the way history was taught in school. We need to have an equity lens when you choose a geography for the pilot for the introduction of the historic resource inventory. Kathy mentioned in her testimony that we've lost 14 sites that are important to Black history. Bosco Milligan Foundation in 1997 created the Cornerstones of Community Buildings of Portland of African American History. This is the revised and expanded edition that I have here from 1997. The historic resource inventory does not reflect the cultural diversity of the city of Portland. It is imperative to update the inventory to be reflective of all people in our city. And that gets back to what Teresa was saying, that delays in some neighborhoods will not bring the money. You will not have the million-dollar angels that come in. And it's in the 80s, the volunteers that were interested were communities that they had the volunteers that could work on historic assets. Where other communities, this may not be their top priority, and we need to make sure when we reach out to volunteers for surveying neighborhoods that we bring in a component of education and diversity. Another concern I have is I was very happy to work on the code improvement project, but historic listings are still very expensive because they're not a type one. I would hope that they could be made a type 1X. Northwest District Association is concerned because if a homeowner wants to put themselves on the National Register, they have to go through a Type 2 review, which is cost onerous. Thank you.
Thank you all. Questions? Thanks very much. Okay.
The next three are Peggy Moretti, Andy Olson, and Wendy Rahm. And they will be followed by Lewis Fitzgerald Holland, Michael Johnson, and I believe it's Kathy Kane.
Good afternoon. Peggy, I think you're first.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for diving deep into this important issue. I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm the Executive Director of Restore Oregon, the same organization Brandon Spencer Hartle works with. And we, just to reiterate, we very much support the very common sense recommendations presented already today from the Landmarks Commission and appreciate all their work so very much, as well as the Design Commission. I'd like to build on this a little bit to address some of the Landmarks recommendations, such as seismic upgrades and some of the economic components that are need to underpin this initiative. And really address the need for appropriate incentives. We've been talking a lot about regulation today, but let's also look at some of the, which you might think of as sticks, let's talk about some carrots that really need to be put into place to incentivize restoration and reuse. You're probably very well aware of the data that shows that rehabilitating an existing building creates more jobs than new construction. But currently, Portland and all of Oregon is missing a key economic tool that has been proven in 35 other states to boost preservation and reuse, create significant numbers of jobs, and revitalize historic districts, and that is a state rehabilitation tax credit. Restore Oregon is working to pass a rehabilitation tax credit in the 2015 legislative session. This is a 25% state income tax that we're proposing, which could be tapped for the restoration of historic commercial and income-producing multifamily properties. It would be used to restore facades, fund seismic upgrades, which I think is an important element of all of this. We all talk about the big seismic imperative, but we're not doing anything to make that work happen in terms of financial incentives. It would fund those upgrades, ADA access. It would activate the vacant upper stories of these buildings and make reuse of our historic buildings far more financially viable. Our organization and many others in our growing coalition of supporters for what we're referring to as the RTC, the Rehab Tax Credit, believes this is the single most important thing we could do to revitalize Skidmore Old Town, Japantown, Chinatown, and countless other historic places across the city, including the smaller property that Teresa was just talking about. That Burger Barn building would be eligible for this type of a tax credit, which would certainly go a long way towards being able to preserve that building. We believe a rehab tax credit generates a very positive ROI by creating jobs, reactivating main streets, creating authentic spaces that attract new business and residents into our downtowns, boosting private property values and local tax revenues, making our buildings safer and seismically resilient and up to code, and it provides a significant incentive to reuse instead of to demolish. So we're urging that the City Council make this a top priority on your state legislative agenda for this coming session.
Thank you. That's very timely. I'm going to ask Martha Pellegrino to follow up, our Intergovernmental Relations Director, to follow up with you and make sure we have the specifics of that, because the Council is, the next few weeks, going to be starting to develop that legislative agenda. So
I appreciate that. And you said something to me last fall when you spoke at our event, so I appreciate you reiterating that.
That's, I think, of great interest to
everybody. It's kind of a no-brainer, and really, honestly, Oregon is one of the very few states that doesn't already have one. So we're leaving a lot of
good. Not every no-brainer survives the legislative process. we'll give it a good go.
That's true, but we can all raise our voice. It's a practical step.
Ms. Reddy, just one note of caution. I mean, from the legislature's perspective, just like at the city level, we spend our general fund on police, fire, and parks primarily. They spend their money on education, health care, and prisons. And to them, any tax credit looks like, you know, money diverted from those things. Mm-hmm. So I think we should all always suggest what other revenue can you raise or what can you cut if you're talking about spending any money in any way.
That's the wonderful news is there's so much data from other states that demonstrate that there is a long-term positive return on investment in terms of new tax revenues and new job creation and all the other ripple effects of increasing the values of those properties and the new businesses.
I'm sure that that's true, but they're going to be looking at the short-term financial impact. So just to ride one of my hobby horses, I think that when we talk to legislators, we should reinforce that we now have the same crime rate we had in 1965 and 350% more people in prison adjusted for population. Yeah. So we could encourage them to step up the incarceration reforms they started last year.
Yeah.
That might sound like a tangent, but to me, I mean, I think it's important asking them for money, you say where they get it.
We are getting our ducks in a line and economic impact studies being done, but it's high time we invested in Main Street.
Well, and on their economic development agenda, as you know very well, we got a lot of buildings that are vacant on the upper floors.
Oh, yes.
And we have the lowest office vacancy rate in the country. Hmm. So that might be persuasive on the economic development side mm-hmm. of the legislature. Thank you. Andy, I think you're next.
Sure. My name is Andy Olshan. My friend and neighbor, Val Acheson, was going to speak, but her son Alex needed to go someplace, so they went. I live at 3728 Northwest Thurman Street in Willamette Heights. My home, which I bought in 1997, which was totally trashed, was designed by Ellis Lawrence and built in 1911. And just last year, I think we finished the restoration, which took a lot of sweat and money and blood and broken fingers and all sorts of fun things. Last month, our neighborhood was at the center of a very public demolition issue. Earlier this year, a California software executive and his wife bought a beautiful 1892 house listed on Oregon's historic landmark inventory, publicly stating that they intended to do modest renovations to the house. Somewhere along the line, things abruptly changed, and the neighborhood learned that in the city of Portland, it's possible to do three things in less than one business day. One, withdraw a property from the inventory. Two, submit plans for a new ultra-modern house and designed by a California architect, actually. And three, get the city's approval to tear down a 122-year-old house that had been a focus of the neighborhood. The whole experience left a group of Willamette Heights neighbors committed to convincing you that the rules concerning demolitions of older homes should be changed. We support the three principles you've heard discussed today. One, defining demolition as the removal of 50% or more of an existing building. Two, require all residential demolitions to adhere to minimum delay and neighborhood notification requirements. Three, establish a task force to identify additional building and zoning code improvements that would ensure demolitions are appropriately managed and that replacement construction responds to neighborhood characteristics. We also defer to the experts in the room and are open to whatever makes sense. We've submitted a list of 140 neighbors who have expressed support for these principles. We gathered those names in less than a day and could have gathered many more had we had time. We urge you to adopt the rules that slow demolitions way down, rules that will involve neighborhoods far more. Without those rules, we'll lose an important part of the character of Portland. We should not be stewards of that loss. And on a personal note, please don't wait for the comprehensive plan process to address this issue. That's not going to work.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Wendy, welcome.
Thanks. Thank you very much for letting me speak. I'm Wendy Rome, a resident of the mixed-use residential West End, and here to speak about it as a special, unique part of Portland. The West End is what makes Portland, Portland, but it's at risk. A few years ago, I personally did a survey of the West End's historic buildings and found over 100 of them. Most are not on the historic register. Over 80 were built between 1880 and 1935, an active period of the city's westward growth. The area is rich with magnificent architecture by well-known architects, buildings that tell Portland's story beautifully. Most buildings are unprotected. I have prepared a presentation that I would be happy to show you at some point to better understand the connection between these buildings and Portland's story. These buildings are at risk for demolition as building heights of 325 feet, 460 feet, and unlimited heights are being proposed for the area. For example, 460 feet is proposed for the Governor Hotel's block. That makes no sense. We will need to find a balance between density and livability and our history. As a resident, I can tell you the area is thriving, partly because of its human scale and authenticity. At a recent Making Cities Livable conference at the Governor Hotel, where over 300 elected officials, architects, and urban planners from 25 different countries assembled, some comments I heard were, authenticity cannot be recreated. Heritage is a fleeting resource. Many I spoke with coveted the concentration of so many authentic buildings. It is what other cities wish they had preserved. Authenticity draws the creative class. This area is livable because of the human scale provided by these historic and old buildings. Its urban form fits with new concepts emerging for the most sustainable urban form, that of mid-rise, dense, compact, so-called flat cities. To protect this part of Portland's history for future generations, it may mean new historic districts, lower height and FAR in the West End, and some neighborhood-specific design guidelines that encourage compatible development on a more refined scale. I would be happy to help on this in any way you might deem useful. I hope you come to value this special area of town as much as I do. It demonstrates that Portland has a respectful sense of itself and of its past. It's why Portland is so special. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any questions? Thank you all.
Okay. Next three are Lewis Fitzgerald Holland, Michael Johnson, and Kathy Kane. And they will be followed by Jennifer Solomon. Sorry, Doug Jackson, I believe it is, or Don Jackson, and Mary Helen Kincaid.
Lewis, go ahead, please.
My name is Lewis Fitzgerald Holland. I am an 18-year-old student heading off to college next year, and I live at 5101 Southwest Nevada Court, Portland, Oregon. So what makes a city unique? Its people, its environment, its culture, and of course, its history. Portland is a unique city rich with historic architecture and unique mature neighborhoods. These structures and neighborhoods make up the core of Portland's identity. A place's present is the sum of all that has come before. Without that preserved past, we have no identity, and once it's lost, it's truly gone forever. With a record 279 residential demolitions within Portland proper last year, and 158 so far this year, this is no small problem. And yes, Mr. Novick, that's a long turnover rate to replace every house. But it's more than enough to damage the fabric of our most historic and developed neighborhoods. And with an upwards demolition trend, the problem will only worsen. This epidemic threatens historic homes and the fabric of our developed neighborhoods. Bit by bit, monstrously large, box-shaped homes are turning Portland's most beloved inner-city neighborhoods into patchwork suburbias. If we lose the integrity of these places, we lose what makes Portland truly unique and what other cities wish they had. It's a direct result of R5 zoning law changes that shifted the minimum lot size from 5,000 square feet to 3,000. That needs to change. It's a direct result of a loophole that allows developers to apply for a demolition and rebuild permit with zero delay, waiting time, or neighbor notification. That needs to change. It's a direct result of zero protections or delay for the demolition of properties over 75 years of age. That also needs to change. It's the direct result of a policy that allows developers to remove properties on the city's historic inventory to avoid the mandatory demolition waiting period. That needs to change. It's a direct result of a lack of action to preserve historic homes, neighborhood livability, and stem the tide of gentrification that's a direct result of these higher-priced suburban homes driving up property taxes in inner city Portland. That needs to change. And the changes proposed today by this council are a step and a necessary step in that direction. Why am I here today? I'm 18 and I'm heading to college on the East Coast in a month. I'm not a senior citizen of society who doesn't like to see the old, quiet, smaller Portland disappearing. I'm here because I truly care about preserving what can't be replaced. Once these beautiful and unique neighborhoods and structures and houses are gone, they're gone forever. They're gone for my generation, and they're gone for every generation that follows after that. And it's up to us to be the stewards that preserve it. There's a place for redevelopment. There's a place for demolition and construction, but not like this, not in a way that blatantly disregards history and our past, that puts money before the welfare of people and our city. We don't want to lose our unique history, and we don't want, as a city, to become an urban suburbia. It's time to preserve and protect our past and our history that defines our present, not toss it aside to fill the coffers of inconsiderate developers. We will not give in or give up or stop making noise until these changes are implemented. These policy changes need to occur, and soon, or we risk losing our heritage, and that will be on us for generations to come.
Thank you. I'm back soon. Okay, who's next? Go ahead.
Mayor Hills, commissioners, thank you for this time. My name is Michael Johnson, and my wife and I reside at 6221 Northeast 22nd Avenue. We've been there since 1983. I'm a native resident of Portland. We're greatly concerned with what is happening in our neighborhood regarding developments and the way investors, real estate groups, and contractors are coming in unannounced with no prior notice to residents, and in some cases with total disregard for any damages they may inflict on neighboring properties. The splitting of lots to add a row house to the existing lot, which will increase traffic and parking issues and the possibility reduction in surrounding property values. I believe that permits should not be granted in a former owner's name. The work should not be allowed to begin until the permits have been posted publicly. That neighborhood notice should be a mandatory condition for any demolition or new construction permits, so current residents may evaluate their situation as how they might be affected. How hard is it to knock on someone's door and let them know, him or her know, that work is going to begin in their alley and perhaps their plants may be at risk? If a contractor did this for me, I would be more than willing to go out and evaluate the situation and move it if I could. But in so many cases, they just show up, and of course, when most people are gone to work, they wreak havoc, and when we come home, only to find the damage they have left. Then we are forced possibly to have to take legal action. It's not right. Also, we are greatly concerned with the way that they are cutting down the trees at will and at a rapid-fire pace. Northeast Portland residents have cherished the trees here for a good part of our lives. We spend great sums of money to keep them up and try to help protect their lifespan. I think we can look right above our heads at the mural and see what the trees mean in our city and what they've stood for. We also cherish the wildlife populations that depend on them. That's why the current permit laws need to be changed and revised. The current condition of at 6208 Northeast 22nd Avenue would be a case in point as to a number of these issues. They have also excavated the entrance to the alley on Northeast Holman Street, causing some property damage, and have closed off the entrance to the residence and the sidewalk to pedestrian traffic. It has been like that for 2 weeks now, and they have not done anything since. I see this as a possible safety issue, since Holman Street is the neighborhood bike path, and there are numerous children and elderly who use this sidewalk. I wonder if they even have a permit to do this, and I believe the city should send someone out to look at the situation. Besides those issues are the sneaky and almost covert way the people doing this have tried to avoid any residents. Out of the numerous vehicles that have shown up, there's only one that's had any kind of company logo or identification, and that's been the surveyor. There's been a stream of cars and SUVs slowly driving by, checking out the property and alley where they've done the work, to the point that it makes it kind of look suspicious. I ask, what are they hiding from? A guilty conscience makes for guilty actions. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Kathy Kane, and I am a neighbor of my former here. And I would just like to say how grateful I am for the opportunity to share my concerns about not only my Concordia neighborhood, but also our progressive, beautiful, and innovative city of Portland. Portland has worked hard to earn the reputation for livability along with sustainability, but with the current epidemic of unregulated demolition of homes and building codes, loopholes, I am concerned about how, as a city and as a neighborhood, we can maintain these core values of livability and sustainability. I support responsible urban infill. I do not support manipulation, greed, and lack of community input, especially when drastic environmental and building changes are to be made that will negatively impact our neighborhood's character, quality of life, and value of homes. These will be the unintended consequences of non-regulated demolition of homes and lot splitting. I, along with many other Portlanders, feel vulnerable and powerless regarding this issue. So I end with two questions for all of us. What more can we do, and how can you help us to protect and maintain the natural beauty of our Concordia neighborhood that was recently listed as one of the top 10 best neighborhoods in the nation? I'd also like to say how inspired I am that I, as a senior citizen, can sit next to a soon-to-be freshman and have the same passion and concerns, and that you are so willing to listen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Questions? Thank you. Stay in touch.
The next three are Jennifer J. Solomon, Don Jackson, and Mary Helen Kincaid. And they will be followed by Rena Jones, Sarah Hobbs, and Veronica Schwendrig.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Starting first.
Yes. My name is Jennifer Solomon, and I live at 6349 Northeast 22nd Avenue. Right up the street from our former speakers. The strength of Portland, in my opinion, has been its neighborhoods, which are strong, dedicated, and have a strong sense of place. But now these neighborhoods are profoundly shaken by an epidemic of tearing down houses, cutting down trees, building large homes. There appears to be no respect for existing architecture, foliage, or landscape. The very things which are attractive about Portland are being destroyed by this current state of affairs. In the name of high density, developers are running roughshod over neighborhoods, and it's all legal. But to me, it often looks unethical. As a former speaker said, how can we hold it against developers for doing that which is legal? The problem is not necessarily developers. It's the law which is allowing this. And thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Mary Ellen?
Hi, I'm Don Jackson. I live at 6130 Northeast 22nd. And the house in question at 6208 is next door to me. I'm an architect, and I find it amazing that somebody can go into the Bureau of Buildings, ask for a permit, be issued a permit, and destroy a building in the same day. To put in its place a skinny house on a 25-foot lot that has no character or contribution to the neighborhood, and I'm sorry that Mr. Novak is sleeping, that adds nothing to the environment, does take away from the neighborhood itself. And the simple reason that the building is being built is to gain financial gain. This particular house is taking down a tree, a cedar tree that is approximately 150 feet high. It's the tallest tree in the neighborhood, which I'm amazed that can happen. But what really bothers me is that there is no design oversight, which I find even more amazing when you consider, and I'm going through this on a commercial project where I have to jump through hoops on design overlays in other parts of the city, whereas in the Concordia, there are no design overlays, there are no design reviews, there's no review, period. As everybody else has testified, you can come in and do this literally overnight, which is not fair to anybody. And in closing, I would like to say that this violates the spirit of Portland. And we can do something about that. Get the spirit back. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Helen, welcome.
I'm Mary Helen Kincaid, and I might wake the group up because I'm going to say some things. I'm a native Portlander. I'm a senior citizen. I live in a neighborhood that's in a 100-year floodplain, East Columbia. We have no older historic homes except for Vanport flood survivors, and so the definition of historic might run there. And I'm also the vice chair of the Development Review Advisory Committee. And one thing I came here, some of the things I came here to say, I'm not going to say, because I believe I'm very, very much encouraged by the number of people that are concerned about doing the right thing. And I've always said, and numerous people, and maybe even you have heard me say, that we need to find an easy way for people to do the right thing. I think it was Guinevere Millius that said more humane. And I think that's the important thing. I want to remind everybody what Jeff Fish said. The Development and Review Advisory Committee is addressing all the things that have been mentioned as wish list. We're on those wish list things. We've been meeting for hours. Claire Carter and myself have attended numerous neighborhood meetings, land use group meetings, chairs and directors of the coalitions, and gotten feedback. The door hanger, while it wasn't perfect, and it can go through reiterations, it had some unintended consequences, but it is a notification, and we're working on enhanced notification for neighborhoods and neighborhood associations and working with them. The June 11th conference at Concordia was organized by neighborhood coalitions, the North, five of the seven Northeast neighborhood coalitions, so they've been working on this issue. We're working with the Oregon Home Builders Association, as Jeff mentioned, to address the issues of asbestos and lead. I was the one that got the state to come to the June 11th conference, and I can't say that I was. I put a call into Tina Kotek's office, and the next day people were calling me. So we have pretty good contact there. So I think that we have a lot of positive things that are being done. I would encourage these people, and I think somebody said she had 54 phone calls. I've had well over 120. I probably have 300 emails in my draft folder that says demolition issue. I want to hear those things because I want to hear all sides. And we've heard a lot from neighbors today, some people vilifying developers, but this gentleman said a very important thing, and you did too. It's the code that's letting them do it. They're doing what they're allowed to do. And many of them want to do the right thing. They live in these neighborhoods. Some of them live in older historic homes. They're historic remodelers. So I want to applaud the efforts of these other groups bringing these things forward so that we can continue to work on them as a group. And I think someone in one of my list wish items was to have a task force of people that can identify the resources, the data, get that historic resource inventory updated. There are people out there with a lot of skills. I heard that some of them mentioned today. Continue to build on the coalition efforts. I want to go to where I always say, tell me what I don't know. I think it was Franklin Roosevelt that said that. We need to know what we don't know so we aren't always here on parking issues, on demolition issues. There are bad things that happen, and we need to figure those things out. I don't think $20,000, even though you said it was a doable thing, maybe it's a start, but I think being able to identify one neighborhood, there's a whole other can of worms there, but might be able to work that out. Designing homes to the last 100 years, somebody mentioned that. I live, like I said, in East Columbia, and Bridgeton is mostly all floating homes. We don't fit into any of those categories. So we need to take into context all of the fabric of Portland, not just the older homes and how we and one last thing that I want – well, I have one last thing. I'll take Jeff Fish's 3 minutes. The deconstruction program, I think we really need to look at that, the carbon tax. BPS is working on that. It's been wonderful to work with, and I've had bad experiences and good experiences dealing with city staff, and this has been an excellent. Every time DRAC has asked for statistics, they've moved quickly on the notification issue. They've worked tirelessly on working on the definitions, and it's, as Jeff alluded, it's far more complicated than I ever dreamt it would be. And I think I'm learning things I never thought I could learn, but we're getting there, and there are people out there in the neighborhoods that have been, like you said, they're very confusing. We can help them do better. So I hope that we'll be able to continue our efforts and that people will recognize that both BDS, BPS, and all the other infrastructure bureaus that impact these codes are working together on a cooperative basis with the Development Review Advisory Committee, which I can't quote the exact mission, but we're there to advise the city on development in the city. So my last closing quote, because I usually end with some little bumper sticker thing, is coming together is a beginning, keeping together is progress, and working together is success. And Henry Ford said that, and he was a pretty smart guy, so I think we should do that. Thank you.
Mr. Jackson? Go ahead. You raised an issue that I've heard a lot of people raise in emails recently, which is that people are tearing down homes, replacing them just for profit. And there's a lot of things that happen in this free market society of ours that are detrimental and just for profit, like selling donuts, which, you know, arguably contributes to diabetes, then it's for profit, and selling gas-guzzling cars, which is a problem for the environment, and that's just for profit. So I'm kind of wrestling with, to what extent do you think we should be ratcheting down the profit motive in this society?
Well, that was an example because I believe that, I mean, I'm an architect, so I believe that we can develop density in Portland, but it has to be done in a proper way. The particular house in question is a lot and a half, and it is just being, the house is just being put in there to be sold at a profit because the site, the lot with the house and the garage, it's the only lot and a half lot.